PC Correct, the 14th September 2007.
I hope that it's not going to be a long meeting, because on Tuesday we have agreed on most of the things. Good morning to the department. Good morning to our guests here. All of you are very much welcome into the meeting. I hope that all the members are in possession of the new draft. Members, do you have it? The new draft. We have it. Members, as you know, the agenda for today is a very short agenda, and the agenda is as follows: formal consideration and adoption of Correctional Service Amendment Bill. B32 of 2007. Members, it is formal consideration and adoption of the bill. I want us to give the State Law Advisor a chance to take us through, and then our Parliament's legal advisor, Mr. Banara, will also come in, so that we must finalize this thing today. Can you take us through, ma'am? But I will propose one thing. Where we have pointed out issues, otherwise we are going to go through this whole thing again. Where we have pointed out issues, and I'm sure that you know, ma'am, where we have pointed out issues, where we have said it must be added or whatever, you must please do that, and then go to some others. Even Mr. Vanara must also participate in this whole thing. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. The document before you is the final version of the proposed amendments which were proposed by the committee. And today what I'm going to do, I won't go through the entire document.
Ma'am, you see, you are saying that this is the final thing that was proposed by the committee on Tuesday. And I can tell you now that there's something in here that was never agreed on Tuesday. So I want you to choose your words very carefully. Very, very carefully. Not say that we have agreed on that, because it's not the truth. And the commissioner and his team and the members of this committee will agree that it's not the truth. So I want you to choose your words very careful. Don't say that we have agreed on it.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to put you through to the suggestions that were made in our last meeting, starting with the definition. On page one of the document, clause one, and in the bill, it's on page three from line one, to omit care, the definition of care as defined in the bill, and to substitute it with this refined definition of care. So I'm going to read you the refined definition. Care means the provision of services and programs aimed at enhancing and maintaining the social, mental, spiritual, health and physical well-being of inmates. So this definition will substitute the existing one in the bill. That is the thing that has been inserted in the bill, but also it has been refined. It's a definition of correction. It is being inserted on page 3 after line 6 of the bill. Now you should read, correction means provision of services and programs aimed at correcting the offending behavior of sentenced offenders in order to rehabilitate them. That's a new definition of correction that has been inserted into the bill. And the next one is on page 3 in line 18. Now this, I don't know if you should do this. I'm just going to concentrate on the new suggestion. The next one is the definition of development. This one also, which was proposed last week, but then today it has been refined. It's the same thing. The content is still the same. It's paragraph 2. On page 20 after line, on page 3 after line 20, it inserts the following paragraph, which is G, by the insertion after the definition of department of the following definition. So this definition is inserted in the principal act and it should read, development means the provision of services and programs aimed at developing and enhancing skills, competences and skills that will enable the defendant offender to reintegrate into the community. The next definition that is being inserted in the bill is the definition of disability. That is on page 3 of the bill from line 23. This definition is already in the bill, but it's just that we are substituting it, the existing one with this one. To omit disability as defined in the bill, and to substitute it with this one, disability means a physical, mental, intellectual, or sensory impairment, which prevents a person having such an impairment from operating in an environment developed for persons without such an impairment and includes. Can I pause here, Chairperson? I would ask the department just to indicate the next thing that was suggested in that meeting. That's a specific. Morning and thank you, Chairperson. On page 8, clause 32, the insertion of minimum before force. Page 8, clause 32, paragraph 3, on page 9 in line 37, after use to insert minimum.
The
Verse 27, clause 39. Clause 39 of the bill. In the document, it's number 3. Clause 39 in the document number 3. From page 12, in line 9, to omit may and to substitute must. That's the next amendment that was suggested in our last meeting. On page 12, in line 9.
That deals with the children,
eh? Yes.
Yeah, children must be compelled to take part in it. Yeah, that's fine.
Also ask the department just to indicate the specific section that we are talking about. So we are going to work together with regard to those. On page 23, plus 67. Before I could get there, there is also another one in clause 47. Can you start with clause 47 and then we'll go to clause 57? Page 17 of the document. Page 17 of the amendment. Clause 47. On page 15, in line 5, to omit court, which is in bold, and the minister, which is underlined, and to substitute court, which is on board. The next one is on page 15 from line 27. To omit in paragraph K there, to omit from using or, which is in bold, abusing alcohol or using illegal drugs, and to substitute refrain from using, which is not bold or abusing alcohol or underlined illegal drugs. Now it should read refrain from using alcohol or illegal drugs. The next one is on clause 52. Clause 52, which is on page 16. In line 3, the heading there is the same amendment that is made. If you were omitting use or abuse, which is bold, abuse, which is underlined, or of alcohol or use of illegal drugs, we're omitting the heading, and we substitute it with use, which is unbold and which is not underlined, or abuse, which is bold, or alcohol or illegal drugs. Now you should read use of alcohol or illegal drugs. Still in that clause, on page 16, from line 4, to omit use or, which is bold, abuse alcohol or use illegal, and to substitute used or abuse which is involved, alcohol or illegal, now it should read, where there is a reasonable suspicion that the person has used alcohol or illegal drugs. I would ask the department to indicate to me the next amendment. Page 23 of the document. It's page 23 of the document and it's clause 57. It is on page 18 from line 47. To omit, from line 47, to omit the minister must, in consultation with the National Council, comma, by notice in the Gazette, that the cards are omitting, and to substitute, the National Council must, in the manner prescribed by the regulation made in terms of section 1341 KKI, and in consultation with the National Council, with the National Commissioner. It was the proposal that came from the Parliamentary Legal Advisor that it should clarify that it should be by means of regulation. So we tried to capture that. Now we should read from the bill. The National Council must, in the manner prescribed by the regulations made in terms of section 1341 KK and in consultation with the National Commissioner, determine minimum period for which offenders must be incarcerated before being considered for placement under community corrections in this act referred to as the incarceration framework. And after having been ratified by the minister. The next amendment is on page 25 of the document, of the proposed amendment. Page 25, clause 63. That is on page 21 of the bill. Clause 63, page 25 of the document, and page 21 of the bill, from line 7. To omit and is considered by the Correctional Supervision and Parole Board, or in the case of a person serving life sentence by the minister as not being capable of committing a crime in future. Is on page 27 of the document. That is the new clause that is being inserted into the bill. Page 27 of the document. It's the insertion of section 88A in S111 of 1998. That section deals with the appointment of the Chief Executive Officer. This clause, in our last meeting, it was suggested that the insertion judge should make appointment in consultation with the National Council. But I would ask the department to explain because I got instructions from them and then I drafted the instructions on the change. So I can't motivate. Because in our last meeting, it also has suggested that they're expecting that make appointment. So I would ask the department to intervene.
And then we agreed. You must also add that, ma'am, state law advisor, you must also add that we have agreed on that one as a meeting. And then now they are coming and try to talk to you and say that you must change your mind in what we have agreed on. It's very much important that we stick to agreements in meetings. You see, when we are here in Parliament, we are very much serious in doing our work. Now we spoke about this thing on Tuesday, and the state law advisor said that no, she agreed. She was first saying that no, this thing is having a problem, but then she's now also very honest to say that the department came to her so that she must change her mind. Can we hear from the department?
Thank you, Chairperson. Indeed, the department said that we would like to concede to the committee's view that it should, in order to protect the independence of the Office of the Inspecting Judge, that clause should enable the inspecting judge to make the appointment. And you will recall that the point raised by the state law advisor at that point was the caution with regard to what the present case law is. And therefore, after the debate, retracted. And so we as a department also supported that position. Chairperson, it is unfortunate that upon reflection and further consultation, the concern that we have to point out is again the issue of case law and the need to protect the integrity of the judge who is the inspecting judge, compelling us to to say that if we have agreed in that regard, how do we overcome the possible conflict in a situation where there is a dispute between the office of the judge and the inspecting judge, and we thought there may be a way of circumventing that without compromising the decision that was agreed upon in the meeting. Unfortunately, Chairperson, in grappling with that issue, we felt we need to come back to the committee and really say that it is a bit problematic from the point of view of future possible litigation. And in considering this, the department looked at various options. Firstly, I must stress, in listening to the committee, that the primary concern is the issue of the independence of the inspecting judge. The department contends that that is indeed a critical consideration, and the remedy open to us may be for us to have legislation that enables the inspecting judge to or the office of the inspecting judge through the CEO to account directly to Parliament through a separate vote in a separate bill. But since the legislation that we have drafted does not enable us to do that during this amendment, it may be an issue that we have to put before you and debate further. Of course, in order to take serious the concern of the committee, one may have to look at other possible formulations where we can balance the different concerns both of the committee and the department, especially from the angle of the accounting officer. So we really would request that this matter be revisited by the committee in order for us to get guidance on it. And I'm saying I'm very aware of the need for us to maintain the independence of the inspecting judge, but we really have a bit of a dilemma. And if we proceed, rather if this clause is withdrawn in its entirety, there is indeed a danger that the present arrangement, if we should stick to the present provision in the Act, it will possibly hamstring the office of the inspecting judge. As you may be aware, that currently we have a serving judge as the inspecting judge, and the in terms of the legislation, the department seconds a director to the office of the inspecting judge, and we saw the clause, if it's withdrawn, may not enable us to improve the status of that office, because we believe that the chief executive officer can be appointed on a higher level in the public service in consultation with the DPSA than what is currently the case, and in so doing provide a more effective administrative function. So I really want to apologize to the committee that for this situation, and I would really urge the committee's indulgence to again re-look at that clause. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Commissioner, you know we have said on Tuesday that the independence of this office is very, very crucial to this committee. You know, you can't have a watchdog body that must watch over the Department of Correctional Services, and this body is an extension to the Department of Correctional Services. You can't have that situation. That is the key to me personally, and I think to the committee, because I know that the ANC study group discussed this thing for a very long time, and that is the feeling of the study group. But I think that we are there to debate it. I will give you the benefit of the doubt that we debate it and take your concerns also into consideration, but not to compromise the independence of that office. That one is, we can't negotiate that one. The independence comes first of that office. Because, you see, otherwise we can close that office. I've said it on Tuesday. Then we can close that office to say that, no, this office is part and parcel of correctional service. How will the ICD of the police watch the police when they are part and parcel of the police? You see, they are doing a very telling job now, the ICD, Independent Complaints Directorate, because society as a whole, they are in confidence they can go to these people and complain to these people. Inmates in prison must have the same confidence to that office of the inspecting judge to say that, no, we can go there. We can raise our problems, our concerns, and whatever to this office. But if they will have that perception and say, no, this is part and parcel of it's an extension of the Department of Correction. I'm saying let us take that one as key, the independence. We can debate it. We can talk about it, but we are not going to compromise on the independence of that office.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I'm glad that you have allowed us the concession to reopen discussion on that matter. And I think I especially want to appreciate the reference to the Independent Complaints Directorate of the South African Police Services. I would say that as an accounting officer, it would be a model that would work best in this context. However, I must say immediately also that the Office of the Independent Complaints Directorate, as you would know, is also separately constituted with a separate vote, and therefore the issue of accountability is not a concern. In the same way as we have the Office of the Inspecting Judge. And therefore my initial point of saying that we may have to arrive at a point in future where this aspect is dealt with in separate legislation in order to further enhance the independence of the Office of the Inspecting Judge. The second point that I want to raise in terms of that discussion that's further complicated, apart from the fact that it is in the Principal Act of Correctional Services, is of course the fact that we're dealing here with a judge as the head of that particular unit. And our concern really flows out of decisions of the appeal court in this regard, regarding the involvement of judges in the administrative function. Having had regard and to the issues that we have raised, Jefferson, we saw that as the ultimate solution, but as a kind of way of taking the concerns of the committee further, we need to make it in a much stronger sense that the CEO should indeed be the prerogative, or the appointment of the CEO should be the prerogative of the inspecting judge, and believe that we believe that the current formulation may indeed be a bit weak, in the sense that it says the National Commissioner must, in consultation with the inspecting judge and the Director General of the Department of the Public Service and Administration. We had looked at an alternative formulation emanating from our last discussion, which would have meant a clause that said the inspecting judge must, in consultation with the National Commissioner and the Director General of the Department of Public Service and Administration, appoint a suitably qualified. So that formulation would have been the one preferred by the committee. It still places the responsibility of the appointment with the inspecting judge, and therefore making the judge a direct challenge for administrative action, if in the event where that should happen. And therefore, the proposed way of perhaps resolving that is to make that the wording a bit stronger by suggesting a suggestion coming from us that the National Commissioner must, not in consultation, but in concurrence with. In other words, it really makes it very clear that the inspecting judge should have the last word in terms of the appointment, and the National Commissioner's role is really an administrative one. And we really hope that would in some way satisfy the committee and also take on board the concerns that the National Commissioner, the accounting officer, would have, especially in the case where there is a direct dispute flowing from a relationship of employer and employee, as in the case of the Chief Executive Officer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We should not look at the proposed Section 88, capital A, in isolation from, I think this is Section 88. Section 89, which of the Principal Act. So this is where I think one can easily lose sight of what the department intends doing here. And before I comment further on that, I would like to find out what is the current problem, what is the problem with the current 89 as it is at the moment. Before I'll say anything, I'd like to get clarity on the current or the problems experienced with the current Section 89 in the Principal Act.
For the benefit of the members, let me also read what 89 is saying, so that the members must also be part and parcel of what we are talking about. It's in the Act, the current Act of Correctional Services, dealing with the inspecting judge. the staff, that will inspect the inspectors and staff. The staff complement of the judicial inspectorate must be determined by the inspecting judge in consultation with the commissioner. That is one. The inspecting judge must appoint within this complement inspectors and such other staff, including a secretary, as are required. Three, such employees, if not correctional officials, are deemed for administrative purposes to be correctional officials seconded by the judicial inspectorate, but are under the control and authority of the inspecting judge. Four, the salary and conditions of service of any such employee must be determined by the inspecting judge in accordance with the Public Service Act and after consultation with the Director General of the Department of Public Service and Administration. That is what Mr. Vanara is referring to. At present, this is the situation now.
So just to add, I think that was subsection 5, perhaps that you read. There's an important subsection 4 there.
Yes.
That reads, the inspecting judge has the same powers and duties as the commissioner for the purposes of administrative management and control of employees under his authority, and may delegate any such power and assign any such duty to an employee of a post level of a deputy director or higher. So my question is, what are the problems that the department is facing with the current provision in the Principal Act? Because you can't just amend the piece of legislation for the sake of amending. There should be a reason for that.
We just thank Mr. Vanara. I think the my colleagues who worked with the draft formulation that I've just inherited will perhaps be better able to explain that. But from a practical point of view, I think there are a number of amendments that we are seeking in order to rationalize the office of the inspecting judge. And you will see the clause that's referred to in 89 continues to provide those administrative functions to the office of the judge. And that's the contradiction that we seek to correct with this amendment in the first instance. Now, the second point with the current arrangement is, of course, that the level of secondment to the office of the inspecting judge is indeed at a fairly low level. And secondly, that the principle of secondment is the one that perhaps further undermines the independence, and so by allowing the chief executive officer to appoint staff, kind of deal with that that dilemma to some extent. So, on the whole, it seeks to further the independence of the inspecting judge. I think the clause that my colleague refers to is perhaps one that we can expect from there to bring further improvements as it relates to the level of functioning of the chief executive officer once he is appointed. And I would suggest that we insist that he or she be given the same authority in the amendment as that of the accounting officer for purposes of this amendment itself. So I think on the whole, once we have decided to free the judge from those administrative functions, we must indeed make sure that the CEO is sufficiently empowered to do that work without the interference of the National Commissioner. I don't know if my colleagues would like to amplify.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to what Mr. The Commissioner has said, the subclause subsection referred to by my colleague Mr. Vanara Section 89(4). The inspecting judge has the same powers and duties as the commissioner. If you look at those functions, they've got administrative functions and management of finances. And those are exactly the functions that we're trying to remove from the judge to be in line with the constitutional principles. This, what exactly brought the amendment to this section? We prefer to the decided case, and we've lengthy debated and discussed this amendment previously. Hence, we moved to the appointment of staff and assistants as amended in the bill in Section 89. And then the only one that's left that's challenging, of course, is this one of the CEO. And we, just before I get there, I'd also like to emphasize that the subsection also says that, he may delegate any such powers and assign any such duties to the employee of a post of a level of executive director or higher. So in my view, even if he delegates those powers, it means he still has those powers, because the delegation of power is not abandonment of accountability and responsibility. So he'll still be having those administrative powers, he'll still be having financial management duties. That's exactly what we are trying to remove. We have to deal with the appointment of the CEO, as the commissioner has indicated, and the suggestion that he made that to say with the concurrence of the inspecting judge. In other words, there's no way that the national commissioner can just appoint the CEO. If we look at the subsection in the bill on page 28, because the powers and functions of it of yes, Chairperson. I want to bring the committee's attention to paragraph 3, which says any matters relating to the work performance of the chief executive officer must be referred to the national commissioner by the inspecting judge. We have to remember that as part of we're trying to compare the inspecting judge in subsection 4, we're saying that he's got the same powers and functions as the commissioner. That's one of the duties that the inspecting judge, if we continue with the process it stands right now, he has to do. In other words, he has to manage the performance of the CEO. He has to enter into a performance agreement. The performance management also may lead to litigation where a person is not really happy with the assessments by the CEO. Hence, he said, let's have such functions. Even though it's an inspecting judge that technically appoints the CEO, for administrative purposes, let it be referred to the national commissioner. But if you look at the proposal made by the department, that it should be with a concurrence, technically, I think the inspecting judge is appointing. It is not here to be with the performance to avoid administrative functions being dealt with by the judge. He will refer to the national commissioner to deal with those administrative functions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Mr. Vanara was asking what is wrong, and I will go further. The structure now at present in that directory. You see, we are not talking here about an individual. Let's leave an individual out as the judge. We are talking about an inspectorate, an office, a structure. Leave the judge out. Leave him out. Let's say that institution. What is wrong with the structure at present? You see, that office is 9 years old. 9 years. And I'm sure that Judge Fagan or Judge Trengroove and what were not full-time there all the time. For instance, Judge Fagan is an old man, very old man. That office was run by a director. You see, the current structure is. This is out of the judge's thing. It's not the structure. Inspecting judge, director, national manager, ICB. It's senior people here. National inspector, national manager, support service, national manager, legal service. I'm saying if we can get clarity, Commission, on what is wrong now when we want the judge to appoint a CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps what is wrong is that at the time that that provision was made, we did not have a constitutional court ruling with regard to the functions and powers of judges. That's essentially what is wrong. And in trying to change that, we have in fact gone further to promote that independence by saying, let us appoint a CEO on a higher level, and let us move away from an era where we second correctional officials to support the judge to a situation where the CEO appoints the staff, full stop. So, really, I think the point that I must emphasize is that our intention here is in fact to deepen that independence. And with this amendment, we are seeking to do so exactly. I am very aware of the fact that it doesn't fully meet the requirements of the committee. it doesn't fully meet the requirements of the committee in terms of the desired level of independence. And I'm saying perhaps that conversation should continue, Chairman. Thank you.
Mr. Banara. Ms. Civil Citizen, we are going to adopt, and I know that you have indicated to me you can that you are part and parcel of the whole proceedings, and you support it. I just want to put it on record that you are with us. You are supporting it. No, thank you, Mrs. Citizen. You have apologized to me. You have indicated that you are going to leave to another meeting.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with the explanation made by the department. And actually, the proposal came from the Office of the Chief Legal Advisor that the office, the inspecting judge, must be relieved of the administrative function in the light of the judge's case. And also maybe someone in the level of the chief executive officer must deal with those functions, with the appointment of staff, determination of terms and conditions of service, financial matters, in order to relieve the executive staff. So that was the intention behind the amendment of that provision. And then further for the reason that they've explained.
Thank you, Chair. Chair. Like what the Commissioner is saying, that this amendment was necessitated by the Constitutional Court decision. And this is the Constitutional Court decision that the committee was referred to by the department. It is the South African Association of Personal Injury Lawyers versus Heath. This is the 2001 decision, Volume 1, BCLR. This is a Constitutional Court decision. Perhaps it is very important for me to go through this case and make the committee understand what were the issues here. And as the Parliament established the Special Investigative Unit, and the Act provided that the President will appoint a judge to head this Special Investigative Unit. What was the reason for this unit? The government, all spheres of government, I mean, particularly the executive and the legislature, have seen the high rise in criminal activities within the State Department. It was corruption, it was all sorts of crime that led to thousands or billions of rands being lost by the state due to these criminal activities. Some committed by people working within the government departments. And this special investigative unit was tasked with investigating these corrupt activities. And once these corrupt activities have been identified, people will be prosecuted. So sort of a litigation side to this, and the commission had to preside over these matters, and the commission or the body actually was given the powers to litigate on behalf of the state to recover these monies that the convicted criminals would have found to have misappropriated from the state. What then happened was a complaint was received by the Special Investigative Unit that there were certain lawyers that were handling third-party claims on behalf of their clients. And lawyers were helping themselves with their clients' money. The Rudolph and Fund would pay the money instead of an attorney taking what's due to him and giving what's due to the client. The other way would happen. The attorney will give the client what's due to the attorney, and the client will get what was due to the attorney. And there was this complaint brought then to the Special Investigative Unit. And this South African Association of Personal Injury Lawyers, these are third-party lawyers, challenged this Act, Section 3, Subsection 1, which gave the powers to the judge to investigate this corruption, to preside over these cases, and to recover these monies where necessary. This is the bone of contention here. Can a judge be given such power? And this is based, the challenge was based on the principle of the separation of powers. And what is the separation of powers? It means you have the legislature as the law-making body, and you have the executive that performs the administrative function. And I want the committee to take note of this concept, the executive that performs the administrative function. Because this is where I think, with due respect, my colleagues are trying to limit the interpretation of this judgment. The executive functions that the that normally refers to as administrative functions, the court argued, for example, it is the job of the police to investigate the commission of crime. It is the job of the state attorney, or it is the job of the NPA to prosecute those that are charged for committing these offenses. It is the job of the office of the state attorney to recover these monies in the event these people have been convicted. Now the question was, this is what the challenge was, that a judge cannot be given functions that ordinarily vest in the executive. Because a judge's job, a judge's function, is to sit in a court of law and preside over cases. And the Constitutional Court said, we need to accept, one, the existence of the separation of powers. That there is a judge, and the judge should not be seen to be moonlighting within the executive, because it's going to confuse members of the body. It's going to dilute this thin line between the judges and the executive. So you need a judge to do what a judge should ordinarily be doing, that is to be sitting in court presiding over cases, not to assist the state in combating crime, because that is what exactly the Special Investigative Unit was doing, to assisting the state in combating crime and recovering the funds. And that is the job of the executive. So the court said that is an administrative function. However, the court said, acknowledging the existence of this separation of powers, need also to accept that there will be instances where judges will be allowed to do executive functions, which include the administrative functions. The instances there will be where there is a judicial commission of inquiry. The president will appoint judges to meet those commissions of inquiry. However, the court can strongly say, look, the reason for this, that judges have these commissions of inquiry, it is because of the integrity that judges possess. And this was the argument that was advanced by the state in support of opposing this application on the challenge of the judges' power. And the court remarked that, yes, we understand that this is no provision of fighting corruption, and in so doing you need somebody whose integrity is impeccable. However, judges are possessing such integrity, but they are not the only people in society with such standing. So we need to discourage judges moving away from the bench to go and pursue these executive functions. And the court says it's difficult to say when will it be unconstitutional for a judge to leave the judge's job and to go to something other than what the judges should be doing. And the court refrained from trying to categorize cases where a judge, for example, if he sits in the judicial inspectorate, that would be unconstitutional. If a judge sits in a judicial commission of inquiry, that would be constitutional. The court said each case needs to be determined on its merits. And this is what I want us to do with specific reference to this commission. So there is no general principle that says judges should not perform executive functions. I mean, and administrative functions, by administrative functions, the court refers to the executive functions, functions that would ordinarily be performed by the executive. And if we look in this particular case, the judicial inspectorate, we must ask ourselves, what is the job of the judicial inspectorate? The job of the judicial inspectorate, it is to inspect correctional centers and to report to the minister on any defects in prisons. It is not necessarily to conduct police and do not ordinarily. This role is more of a monitoring role. That is why then you need to have a very much independent body to exercise this monitoring role. Because you can't have the department monitoring itself. The department has now come to say they need the chief executive officer to do the administrative function. I understand their point. Their point is to say, look, although we have a judge heading the judicial inspectorate, there might well be administrative functions, and the concerning administrative functions to the appointment of the staff, as if the judge cannot appoint the staff. But there's nothing in law that says the judge, cannot appoint the staff. What happens when a judge is appointed to a judicial commission of inquiry? Who must assist that judge? Surely there is administrative staff that must be appointed. And this is what in the current section 89, the current section 89 gives the judge to appoint the staff. The only problem that I have with the CEO being appointed by the department or the national commissioner, if you have a national commissioner appointing a CEO, and the question is, if the national commissioner appoints a CEO, to whom must this CEO report? We can sit here and say that the CEO is subject to the control and authority of the judge. But I'm telling you, if you look at what constitutes the independence of an institution, one, that institution should be able to appoint its own staff. And I see nothing with a judge appointing a CEO, which CEO will be able to appoint once the judge appoints that CO, then it's clear that that CO is responsible and is accountable to only one person. That person is the judge. I think there is an inherent problem if the national commissioner appoints the CEO, and the CEO appointed by the national commissioner appoints the staff, and this staff complement must now go and make a report that says, in the opinion of the national commissioner, there are no sufficient beds, I mean, there are humane conditions there, and I think the independence of that staff will also be in doubt. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Venara, for having gone through the trouble to share the actual decision of the court with us. I am truly educated by it, Chairperson. And I would not want to get into a debate with my learned colleague who is well-schooled in the interpretation of law. So I'm going to try and refrain from doing so and leave the legal people to deal with the arguments of law, except that I find in the analysis of Mr. Navara quite a number of, let me put it differently, quite a congruence with what it is that we have put to the committee, because I want to reiterate that we are here dealing with voted funds, funds which are being voted for from the budget vote for which the National Commissioner is accountable. I would prefer, Chairperson, I think the ideal solution I would want to reiterate is in us arriving at a point where we have a separate piece of legislation that gives the inspecting judge that thorough independence. I would concede that is my preferred option. Unfortunately, within the context of the public administration system, I have a job as an accounting officer that I must do. So that's the first issue. The second issue is that, yes, indeed, we are being advised by the fiscal advisor about the interpretation of that judgment in itself, and therefore I'm saying that they would better be able to respond to that. But for me, the point advanced by my learned colleague that each case will be determined on its merits is perhaps what is key in us to consider. Because on the one hand, I think we don't want to perform the role of an appeal court to make the decision of what's the merits of this particular case. I wouldn't want to be put in that position. But I do see some fundamental differences between the appointment of a judicial commission of inquiry on the one hand and an institution with a budget that comes from the Department of Correctional. There's a fundamental difference there. Moreover, beyond the fact that it's voted funds from the Department of Correctional Services, beyond that, I also see perhaps the dimension of a permanent relationship of an employer and an employee that may further, bring emphasis to the particular merits of this particular case. So from a purely layperson's point of view, and on those cases, I can see that there may be a case for us to look at it differently, whilst nevertheless valuing the points raised by my learned colleague, but I think the legal eagles may want to put a different spin on it, with your permission.
Yes, thanks, Professor. Thank you. Let me add from what my learned friend has added, has clarified and interpreted the case for you. Just to be specific, the crux of that case was the appointment of a judge who is in active service to head that unit. That was part of the letter, and then as a result, this judge who is in active service was going to conduct investigation, as Mr. Navara has explained. conduct investigation on serious misadministration, corruption, and so on. And on top of that, this task was supposed also to perform administrative functions that deal with the appointment of staff, appointment of investigators, and so on, and also to supervise the employers, and also to deal with the determination of service and condition of employment. So these were the functions that were performed by that hit. So the court has decided that section that deals with the appointment of a judge is declared to be unconstitutional, because that would interfere with the independence of the judiciary and the separation of powers. And as a result of this judgment, that act that deals with the appointment of the judge has been amended. And now it deals with the appointment of a suitably qualified person other than a judge. So I just wanted to interpret that. The crux of the matter was the appointment of a person who is a judge. And the other thing that was mentioned was the period. This judge was appointed for an indefinite period. And it's the same as this judge in terms of the Constitutional Act. The period that is being appointed is not mentioned. It's not fixed in the legislation. I'm going to quote this paragraph in terms of the period of appointment. In paragraph 41 of the judgment, it says, first, the first respondent, which is the judge, has not been able to perform his judicial duties for a period of more than 3 years. His appointment is indefinite and will continue unless he resigns or is requested by the president to resign. So the question that we're posing, that this judge, he still remains a judge, but yet he's not performing any judicial function. Now if I can get also to the reference that was made by Mr. Navarra also, on this commission, appointment of a commission of inquiry. That one is just for a fixed period. It's not a permanent employment. The judge can be appointed to perform that function only for a specific period and for a specific task. Once that task has been finalized, and then that's the end of that commission. But you see, it is different with regard to the inspecting judge. The inspecting judge is a statutory body, is established in terms of the statute to perform those functions, and it will continue.
Let me tell you the ideal situation, Chair, to handle this, to which would have handled this issue properly. The fear here is to subject this piece of legislation to constitutional challenges. There exists that possibility. And the commissioner is quite correct. Here we're giving opinions. This matter can only be settled finally if it were to be taken to court and the court were to pronounce itself constitutional court, as it did in this case. So all that we're doing here is a matter of opinion. And which can be right, which can be wrong. And in this instance, an opinion can never be wrong, of course, unless the court makes a decision that is contrary to either of the opinions that exist currently in this room. An ideal opportunity would have been this judicial inspectorate not to be headed by a judge. But in that instance, because the issue here is, what is it that the judge can do without necessarily subjecting himself to constitutional challenge? And if you had, for example, somebody who's got all these integrities that a judge can have, for example, an advocate of 10 years practical experience, then there's no issue of a challenge that the judge can perform these functions or he can't perform, because that person will do all the functions, and there won't even be a need for the CEO. But this is a fundamental issue, that we cannot do currently. There's a judge there that's acting, and we need to have a look at the scenario holistically. And the commissioner apparently is quite correct, because there are also other accounting principles and accounting issues that need to be taken into account here. But as I'm saying, we have, in the Principal Act, given these powers to the inspecting judge to appoint a director. Why can't we give that inspecting judge to appoint, the power to appoint, in consultation with the National Commissioner, the power to appoint the CEO?
I'm
giving you a chance because the politicians will speak now. Finally, we will say, because legal minds came in the department, but we must come up with a solution and the last word on this thing.
No, I would expect that.
Yes.
Having appreciated the extent to which you've allowed us to debate this matter, I'm very pleased about that. But I'm just fascinated by the fact that we've come full circle, because you will indeed recall that was our initial intention to overcome this, and it was changed. I think he's saying it's an ideal, it's the ideal, and if indeed it is the case, I don't know how it will resolve the issue of accountability. In terms of the Public Finance Management Act that rests with the accounting officer, though, while it remains part of this act and while it remains part of the voted funds of the Department of Correctional Services. That, I think if we can overcome that dilemma, we would have resolved that kind of tension. And it brings me back to ultimately what I think we need to pursue to protect that independence as a legislative solution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes. And then Mr. Fischer.
Sorry, Commissioner. If I understand you correctly, there is a suggested amendment that seeks, in my opinion, I mean, I'm not an accounting officer, you the accounting officer, but that amendment seeks to say, if I read that amendment with what the committee seems to be saying, that let's get the judge appointing the CEO, but this CEO, appointed by a judge, should report to you for financial matters. So there is that particular amendment clause. Is that insufficient to address these accounting woes that you'll be facing?
Although my legal person is whispering that it is, I personally would not think necessarily that it is. As long as the judge acts on an instruction that he be charged for financial misconduct from the National Commissioner, if that is appropriate and indeed the case. So perhaps there could be some kind of areas of concern that emanates from that. So maybe I should allow her to point out that possible contradiction. Chairperson, I'm arguing as a layperson and thinking on my feet in this regard, and I would much rather take guidance. I would, in the first instance, subscribe to the view that you cannot perhaps anticipate any possible thing in law. But if indeed we are to be faced with a matter of financial misconduct, for example, who takes action there? And I think as I'm speaking and thinking on my feet, that may be a practical example where that could become a problem in terms of accountability. But let me hear what Ms. Malebe has to say on this.
Unless if I didn't understand the question well, I thought the question was that except for the fact that the CEO must account for finances to the accounting officer, is there any other problem? Did I understand the question well?
Ma'am, what I'm saying is we're trying to meet each other halfway here. The question is, what is the problem with the inspecting judge appointing the CEO, which CEO falls under the control and authority of the inspecting judge, but acknowledging that this office receive funds from the national commissioner, and the national commissioner must account for these funds. It would be unfair for the committee to say financially, I mean, the commissioner must account for funds over somebody that does not account to him. So we're trying to make a provision for this CEO to account financially for all the money that he receives from the commissioner, to account back to the commissioner. And my understanding would be, in case of misconduct financially, the CEO, I mean, the national commissioner has got all the powers to deal with the CEO in the respect of the funds. So my question is, what is the problem with that particular scenario?
In other words, then, I think I understood the question very well. The problem with the inspecting judge appointing the CEO is, as we've just explained, and even previously explained, that is an administrative function. With the CEO accounting to the commissioner, that is already covered in the bill. It's not a problem. And in case of any financial mismanagement or misconduct, he will have to be disciplined accordingly in terms of the PFMA.
You're saying the CEO will be disciplined by the national commissioner in case the CEO misconducts financially?
Yes, he has to be disciplined in terms of for the PFMA.
I rest my case, sir, and I think the decision is up to the committee.
But I think before you, I think that the commissioner's mind is settled now. Because the commissioner was worried, and I agree with what the commissioner is. The commissioner was worried about the budget. And when this person, the CEO, is mismanaging funds and whatever, who is going to discipline this person?
Yeah. Amongst others, Jameson. But the issue is the administrative functions, which is the primary issue brought to our attention by the state law advisor.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Firstly, I must apologize that, firstly, I brought in this law in 1945 here, in 1995 here in South Africa. You know, we were touring Denmark, Netherlands, and England. Then I asked the Minister of Justice, who monitors the correctional affairs, who monitors the prisons there? Because there, the prisons are under injustice, fall under justice. Prisons and safety and security, they fall under justice. Now, he said, we've got an ombudsman. Then I asked him, how does he work? He said to me, no, he deals with monitoring the treatment of prisoners. And then he gives reports. He's an independent individual, works. He has got his own budget manager. That's all. Then I brought here in South Africa, the then Minister of Justice, said, no, this thing, I think, is a very good thing, but right in South Africa. You know, because they chose to call it second judge here. But what perhaps I want to know here, you are taking away the word in consultation. You see, in concurrence. That is a critical word, that one. We have to understand the difference between in consultation and in concurrence. The judge in concurrence with the commissioner. That's a different meaning. Yeah. It means those people are working together. And then they discuss the question of the employment. three of them together and ultimately judge will have the final decision. I think that is how I understand it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't have my hand up to. But I think, Chairperson, I think maybe following this whole process, maybe we need to consider looking into this office having its own budget vote. I think it's going to solve our problem. Chairperson, speaking from my seat, I think I was going to go for the view that says the inspecting judge appoints the CEO and the CEO on financial issues accounts to the committee. I think that was going to preserve the integrity but the independence of that office. Otherwise, for me, it will be an extension of the department, with the CEO appointed by the department and the CEO appointing the staff. An extension of the department. So I would consider a view that says the judge appoints, but the CEO in terms of finances he remains accountable to the department. Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, as I was listening, I don't think it's the first time we appoint this kind of office which monitors the activities of the department. For instance, we know that even in NIA we do have this Inspector General who monitors certain things from the department. But also the relationship between the Department of Safety and Security and the independent, there is also a relationship. Now, the question that comes into my mind as we look at the powers of the judge and vis-a-vis the department, definitely my concern it will be the judge himself, because we know at the moment we are battling with the transformation of judiciary, and now to give all the responsibilities to the judge alone is going to create more problems for correctional services than to assist them. So now the CEOs also in many departments they do have the report submitted to the accounting officer in that particular department, and also someone from the department working closely with the CEO to ensure that issues that need to be addressed are addressed by the CEO. It means the accountability part is very, very crucial in whatever the appointment is about and the functioning of the CEO.
Very much. I think that has helped us. Yes, please, ma'am.
Well, I just wanted to reiterate one thing that whilst we're saying that in case of financial mismanagement, the commissioner has to discipline the CEO, and whilst also emphasizing the administrative part on the part of the inspecting judge as a challenge for him to perform such function, it would be difficult for the national for the commissioner to discipline somebody whom he or she did not appoint.
I think that the issue raised, Baba Fika raised a very good point on concurrence. Cindy. And you see, Medward is sitting far from Cindy, and they were talking the same thing. we must take into consideration this issue of accountability. It's a fact that we must also safeguard the national commissioner. So I don't think that there's going to be a problem when we are saying that the judge appoints this person, the CEO. But this person, when it comes to monies and whatever and whatever, is accountable to the national commission. Must do that. And I don't think that there is any problem in doing that. I think that Matt Doherty is correct to say she made an example of Nia. She made an example of the other people, of the other structure. I don't think that we are. The independence is very crucial, and the integrity of that office. I have said it. That's very much important, Matt Doherty.
Chairperson, what I'm saying is that the judge alone. Because remember, we are struggling with the attitudes of the judges. The judge alone cannot engage the CEO. It has to be the judge together with the commissioner. If I understand you now, Chair, what you are saying is that the selection will be done by the judge. And I think this is where we are differing, that it has to be the judge and the commissioner.
Winnie? Chukunga is also leaving. Flight is at 11. Cindy, we are... That's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think now we're going to confuse ourselves here. I was thinking that we were talking about separation of power. The monitoring of the inspecting judge. And if we are saying they are going to work to go together. What is he monitoring? If they work concurrently, Chairperson, what is he monitoring? Because I understand that his duty is to monitor the whole duty of the department, including the prisoners and whatever. But now, he's going to monitor who? Because the problem when I'm looking here, Chairperson, is about the budget. That's where I see the problem. Maybe we need to talk in terms of the budget. That how are we going to assist this independence in terms of the budget? But if we said we are going to work concurrently, Chairperson, it's going to be a problem because we want this department to be independent. So I want to understand. I'm confused, Chairperson.
Commissioner, I brought in that word. Yes, I think the Commissioner did propose it. Then let us not explain the word concurrence, where it applies. Let us see that one. The concurrency is only when they are sitting together to employ the CEO, and it ends there. After that, the judge, the second judge, does his work. After they have employed, it means that they work, they come together. Concurrence means they come together and appoint the CEO. And then after that, they do their different jobs.
Saba Fisher, yes. Who is appointing the CEO?
Now, I'm saying, Chair, concurrency means people who are doing something together. That's what it means. They work, they sit in the same form, and then the CEO is there, and then they appoint him. After that, inspecting that does his own work of monitoring. Right.
And that, Mr. Chairperson, the CEO will be employed by the judge in concurrence with the commissioner, and that the CEO will be accountable to the commissioner, administratively speaking.
Chair, I think the commissioner said that we have come to full circle on this issue, and I want to agree with him. And also, Chairperson, you said that you agree what, yeah. And if I understood it clearly, what he said, is what has been said here, that the appointment of the CEO cannot lie on the shoulders of the judge alone because of the explanation that he has given. For me, the interpretation thereof is that it goes back to what we discussed on Tuesday then, that the appointment of the CEO should be done by the judge in consultation with the national commissioner. And you said that is correct. And I also, because Cindy raised the point of the ICD, because the ICD has a separate vote, and the SAPS has their own vote. So, and she also, one of the people here in the house said that if you appoint a person, if a person is appointed by myself, for instance, and then that person must account to you, that is going to create problems. If you were not involved in the appointment of that person. So, I want to align myself with that, Jefferson, because at the end of the day, if this person is appointed elsewhere by the judge, and the commissioner does not appear anywhere, it can create a problem, and that person can easily undermine what the commissioner is saying. But also, Chairperson, I think the important issue on this thing is this independence that we are talking about. Because if we don't feature the judge prominently in the appointment of this person, again, this person can undermine the judge and say, no, no, I'm not appointed by you. Why do you ask me to do this and that? That's my problem.
Members, I've listened now. Let's really come to a conclusion. And I'm having a wording here that I will that we will go through.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. And, you know, I am confused. Because we were debating in our party meeting, and last week it was a portfolio committee, and the department also, he was present, we agree. Now, I don't understand, now which means now we are start again, because we agree. All of us were present. Now, if I'm looking now, as if now we are starting again. And if you can look the minutes of last week, all of us will agree. Now, it's like we started again, which means tomorrow also we are going to turn again and say, no, let's look again. When we are going to finish? And you know, Jefferson, I'm confused. I'm telling you. And we must look. I don't know. You know, I would say last week, Mr. Navarra, she was talking about banana. Oh, banana, G. Oh, thank you much. Oh, okay, thank you much. You know, I was saying last week, from the last week, I was saying, you know, sometimes I'm confused. He was, Mr. Vanara, he was talking about this thing of a prison, about the corruption and all those things. You see those kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying, if you look, the some of members in prison, they help the prisoners to escape. You see, sometimes they say bye-bye. And at the same time, the department is not even telling us those people, those officials are in prison or what. We don't even know. See those kind of things. But if there is an independent somebody, that will help us. So the chairperson, according to me, I think today, agreement of our agreement is here is we come here to adopt this bill. But now we are starting again. We are starting again. I don't know.
No. You know what? Let's come to a conclusion now to this thing.
Basis of the discussion. and I know it's very tedious and difficult. But I have to caution Shepherd that it seems to me that in order to assert the role of the inspecting judge, we have emphasized, overemphasized the aspect of the financial accountability, and I think that may just create a problem. I think when it comes to the issue of discipline, with a proposal that says that the judge makes the appointment in concurrence with the national commissioner, I'm afraid the accounting officer, the national commissioner, I'm trying to remove this from me as the incumbent. I'm afraid the national commissioner at the time can only refer back to the judge to take discipline if it goes that route. And I think that, again, may just create a problem. So I would seriously urge, and I would give the right to the committee to make the decision. And I was really at pains thinking, how do we overcome this? And I was just checking with my colleagues that if we say the judge, the inspecting judge, and putting the inspecting judge first, and the national commissioner make the appointment, that if there's issues of discipline, either one of us can take action. But it would in all cases possibly be the national commissioner would have to take administrative action rather than in concurrence with. I thought that may solve the problem. it may just be the lesser of two possible areas that may conflict at the end of the day, but I'm quite desperate to find a solution to accommodate both the committee and the departmental concerns.
My only concern, Chair, is with the word concurrence. You see, concurrence, the way I understand it, is there must be an agreement between the national commissioner and the judge on who should be the CEO. What happens when the CEO, when the judge wants somebody else and the national commissioner is not happy? There is no concurrence. What happens in that event?
I've given everybody chance to be. And I think that the solution here, Commissioner, can you repeat your last words, what you have said? That the judge, in concurrence with you.
I was saying that whilst my preference would be the national commissioner in concurrence with the judge, I think one possible way, but this is really not a legal interpretation, is to say the judge and the national commissioner. So that there's that kind of duality that would allow the national commissioner still to take action in cases of discipline. Because if it's with a judge, then the national commissioner would have to refer such matters back to the inspecting judge.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what if we say the national commissioner must appoint
and CEO suitable, qualified and experienced person as chief executive officer identified and recommended by the inspecting judge. You are appointing him.
Say that, then I think we've solved all our problems.
Yeah. You are appointing him, the suitable person, and what? Ne?
It's the must element that comes from the judge that I think I
must solved. Come.
Yes.
Identified and recommended by the inspecting judge. With other words, the inspecting judge will do the interviews and what, and you are appointing him.
Yes, Professor, I was going to add on that as well, that the NACA commissioner appointed the recommendation of the judge. So that means the inspection judge will do the selection process, the interviews, and then make recommendation to the NACA to appoint A, B, C.
Having worked so hard, I would want to concede with that instruction, Chairperson, but I wish I could strengthen it in a way that would give meaning to it. And I want to ask the opinion of the legal people here. If we make it specific that it should report it to the Special Investigation Unit, so that there's, and not to the to anyone else, so that it's, you know, follow up by another independent body. Otherwise, you'll report it to me, and then I have to do something about it.
No.
But
the other one that I want to consider is just one of when it comes to reporting after investigation, the minister must forward that you know the minister is getting this report when the inspecting judge.
I
want us to insert there that the minister must forward it to the portfolio committee. Those reports. You see, in the act now, let me read it.
Can I just point you to a clause that says the report must be tabled in Parliament by the Minister, which is clause 90, subsection.
Clause 90,
yeah, paragraph 4, subparagraph B.
Yeah, that's right.
Of the Principal Act.
The inspecting judge must submit a report on each inspection to the Minister. The inspecting judge must submit an annual report. Now, you see, three. The inspecting judge must submit a report on each inspection to the minister, and it ends there. The minister can keep that report and not come to the portfolio group. Like I know for example investigations that Judge Erasmus have conducted in Waterfall prison,
involves more prison here, and we have never seen that report as members of this committee. I want us to insert that, that after each and every, can you please put it in, can you please have it, that we must also see those reports. After the minister got it, we must also have it. Thanks, Commission.
Accepted, sir.
Thanks. We are moving, really. We are moving. Yeah? Commissioner, on the last one, on the composition of this, on this MCC, on that is section, the composition, H, four or more persons, not in full time, servants of the state or members of the parliament appointed as representatives of the public. Are you with me? Are you with me? It's in the act. It's in the act. Section 83. Now I'm reading it. Four or more persons not in the full-time service of the state or members of parliament appointed as representatives of the public after consultation with the portfolio committee on correctional services. Firstly, I want to say, let's put an H, an I. You see, where we say four or more persons not in full-time service of the state, full stop. And then we say, and members of parliament, appointed as representatives of the public, after consultation with the portfolio committee, let's take out portfolio committee, let's say parliamentary committees dealing with correctional services department, because now we are excluding the select committee if we are just confining it to portfolio committee. We are having two houses here.
Chairperson, I just need clarity. You're suggesting that H become inclusive of the select committee by having the more general formulation as committees dealing with correctional matters in Parliament. I do not have any concern. I don't think we would have any concern with that. It would be an improvement indeed. But are you suggesting that it should be other than the four referred to in clause H? Are you suggesting that it should be additional? So in other words, clause H would only refer to members of the public, not his full-time service, and a clause I need to have clarity there.
We can say two in the four. We can say two. Where is four? We can say two, and then two members of parliament.
Chairperson, I would concur with that.
I thought there's a question from the commissioner, and I think this is the point that the chair is trying to make. See, currently that provision, paragraph 8, makes it optional for members of parliament to be in that council. I think the emphasis is they should be there, in addition to the two members of the full-term service of the state.
Chairperson, I think we agreed to the same, that we separate the two clauses, add a clause I, limit H to two, and I to two, but broadening I to include members of parliamentary committees.
We have the wording there. Can you read it
for us, please? Number two, number H, will read two or more persons not in the full-time service of the state,
semicolon, and I, two or more members of parliament appointed as representatives of the public after consultation with the relevant parliamentary committees on correctional services. Get us the new inserted section 888.
Yeah.
This is the appointment of the chief executive officer.
Yeah.
That one should read, if the national commissioner must, on the recommendations of the inspecting judge, appoint a suitably qualified and experienced person as the chief executive officer, who is responsible for all administrative, financial, and clerical functions of the judicial inspectorate, who is accountable to the National Commissioner of the Department for all the monies received by the Judicial Inspectorate, and who is under the control and authority of the Inspecting Judge. That's a new insertion. The other one is the amendment to Section 83 of the Principal Act. Fortunately, in the bill, we've already amended Section 70, Section 83 of the Principal Act, that is on page 21 of the bill, clause 67. Page 21 of the bill, that is clause 67. There's no amendments in this document, in the proposed amendment. So that means the proposed amendments will also incorporate an amendment to clause 67 of the bill in order to capture the inclusion of the appointment, in order to clarify the appointment of the members of parliament to that council. So you want me to... Can you give me a minute, sir? On page 21, it should be from line 47 to insert the following. A, by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph H of the following paragraph. And paragraph H should read, two or more persons not in the full-time service of the state, semicolon, and I, the new inserted I.
two or more members of parliament appointed as representatives of the public after consultation with the relevant parliamentary committees on correctional services. That's the amendment that is going to be inserted into the bill. The next amendment is on clause 90. I'm going to look in the bill if we have not amended clause 90. Yes, it's on page 23. The amendment on clause 90 is on page 23 of the bill. Page 23. Session should be on page 23, plus 74, after line 27. After line 27, to insert the following, and then the paragraph B, that should read, by substitution for subsection 3 of the following subsection, we are substituting subsection 3 of the principal act of section 90 with the following. Now, subsection 3 will read, the inspecting judge must submit a report on each inspection to the minister and to parliament. So that means the report that is at the moment, that is currently submitted, report on each and every inspection that is submitted to the minister will now also be submitted to parliament as well. And then subsection 4 will remain as it is, because that one deals with the submission of an annual report. Yes. Thanks, Shepard.
To whom is Parliament? I mean, I think it should specify. Otherwise, then we won't know to whom must it come to Parliament. I'd just like to hear the reading of that 88K, because there, can my learned colleague just read that 88K for me, please? Say the new amendment, the appointment of the CEO.
A subsection 1, the National Commissioner must, comma, on the recommendation of the inspecting judge, appoint a suitable qualified and experienced person as the chief executive officer.
Sorry, the issue of the Director General of the Department of Public Service and Administration, what about it? But I want to suggest that it reads that the National Commissioner must, comma, on the recommendation of the inspecting judge and in consultation with the DG for public, I don't know. Okay, so that's fine. That's why I wanted to for you to read it again, because I knew there was something wrong with it. Okay.
Now I thought we were omitting the consultation of the director general, but it's fine, we will state it. Now you should read, the National Commissioner must, on the recommendation of the inspecting judge and after consultation with the director general of the Department of Public Service, appoint.
There was just one aspect that I discussed with my colleague relating to the lacuna that existed in the bill, because there was, we are now saying the current period that we were determined in the Principal Act that we are amending. Now the National Council is going to determine the period. But the problem is what happens when we pass this act and the regulations have not yet been approved. So the periods and the task that you look at that. So I just want to look at that new provision.
Chairperson, I was going to continue with the proposal. Remember, I was putting you through the new insertion that we proposed during our last meeting. Now, the next amendment is on verse 96, that is page 28 of the bill. Verse 96, page 28 of the bill. That is on page 28, after line 39. On page 28, after line 39, to insert the following, the new paragraph N. By the insertion after paragraph KKH of the following paragraph, KKI, the minimum period for which sentenced offender must be incarcerated before being considered for placement under community corrections, as contemplated in section 73, capital letter A, provided that the minister must submit these regulations and any subsequent amendments thereto to Parliament for approval. Now if you can turn to page 33 of the proposed amendment. There is a new insertion there in the bill. Page 33 of the proposed amendment. There's an insertion that deals with the transitional provision. That was requested by the department. It basically reads, 98, the amendment effected by the Correctional Services Amendment Act 2007 must, with the necessary changes in context, apply to all life sentences imposed since 1st October 2001. 2004. Yes. The last amendment is on clause 99 that deals with the shortcut and commencement. Clause 97 in the bill, but that thing was corrected. Now it should read short title and commencement. This act is called the Correctional Services Amendment Act 2007 and comes into operation on a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. The other thing that has been inserted in that clause is the subsections that deals with the commencement date, because not all the sections of the bill will commence at the same time, so it's covering for different dates with respect to the commencement. So subsection 2 deals with different dates may be fixed under subsection 1 in respect of different provisions of this act. And there is a new subsection 3 that reads commencement date for section 73 and 73 capital A must be fixed after the regulations contemplated in section 1341 KKI have been made and published in the Gazette. So that is trying to cover now to cover the lacuna that was there. So that section 73 and 73A cannot come into operation unless the regulations have been made and published in the Gazette. So they will go together. They will commence after the regulation has been made.
Through you, Chair, sorry. I think the last page 33 of the new document that we got today,
yeah.
I'll be more comfortable with the reading that says the commencement date for section 73 and 73A must be fixed after the regulations contemplated in section 134, subsection 1, paragraph KKL, have been approved and published in the Gazette. Because these regulations must still be approved here in Parliament, then be published. So they'll only be published after they have been approved. Approved by, I mean, Parliament or the committee.
I think we have moved. Now it's time for us now to adopt and finalize this thing. We are 12 members of this portfolio committee. We must look at the quorum before we do that. 12 members. We are 8 here. We are having a quorum. That is correct. The other political parties have shown and expressed their support for the bill. Civil citizen, Mr. James Self, he called me this morning to apologize, to say he wouldn't be here, but he don't have any problem whatsoever on the bill. Mr. Kipido also sent me a message and spoke to me yesterday to say unfortunately he must go to Johannesburg, but he is supporting whatever we have done because he was part and parcel of the process. And now the ANC is here, and I'm going to read the formalities now of this, because we must do it, and then the people will have their thing. I must go page by page, clause by clause, for us to have this thing. On page one, let me hear from members. Anything? You only say agreed. You only say on that. Page two and page three. What are you agreeing on, Baba? Okay. All right. Page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10, page 11, page 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, let's hear Baba Peter's voice as well. 20, 21, 22, 23,
24. Can you hold on, Chairperson, there?
Yes.
You said page 23?
Yeah.
And there's clause 74, there is amendment to clause 74, but yeah. in the amendment it says clause rejected.
Yeah, no, we will come to that.
Okay.
We will come to that, ma'am. 23, 31, 32, and the last page 33. Now I'm putting the bill with amendment in front of the committee. Can you come now, ma'am?
You can continue.
Yes. Yes. The bill is now before the committee with all the amendments that this committee have agreed on. Do you understand, members? Baba Fika?
I propose the adoption of the bill with amendments.
If you look at page 23 of the bill, clause 74, in the amendments, clause 74, and now you're looking in the amendments, the proposed amendments, page 30, clause 74, we say clause rejected. But it's not rejected now in the light of the new proposal that is just made, amendments to section 93.
That's why I said with amendments, ma'am. Yeah, that's why I said with amendment. That is that covers the entire thing. We are going to sit, myself, you, the secretary, everybody. We are going to sit and sift through this thing. This is the formal stage yet in the house, but we are still having work to do, as the chairperson, the secretary, the legal advisor. On this day. Now, thank you very much. Commissioner, maybe you are having something at closing. I must thank Mayor Dorothy Mudubati. Thank you very much, ma'am, for... Oh, yeah, sorry. No, I know you from the underground structures and that one. We will talk about it, me and you. But thank you very much for the support and for the wisdom and for everything, the contribution that you bring. You are going to the Foreign Affairs Committee. Go and help them as well there. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, on behalf of Minister Balfour and Deputy Minister Jacobus and the team, my extreme gratitude to the Portfolio Committee for the work that you have done. I understand and know that you have put in many long hours, not only during the public hearings, but also in your own spare time to appraise yourselves with the content of this bill and the proposals put before you. I think for the department, certainly, it's not often that we do bring legislation, and the opportunity to have worked so intensely with this committee really has kind of benefited all of us, particularly Chairperson, to you for your leadership in taking us through the legislative change. Legislative amendments and changes are never easy, and it's always something that to which we have to engage quite critically. But I think we've come out of it in a way that really strengthens the Act as far as the department is concerned, and will generally improve the administration of corrections in this country. So a very special word of gratitude to you for your leadership, and allow me in the presence of the committee also to extend my gratitude to the team under the leadership of Advocate Malebe, who has worked closely with you and been with you throughout. Thank you very much, and I trust that this way of working will continue for us, for the benefit of the entire department and those entrusted to our care. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you very much. Let me first thank the members of the Portfolio Committee for their hard work. It was not an easy thing to sit and talk. We had very long, especially the ANC group, very, very long. Filda, I also want to thank you. Please sit. because it's very much important that we take you as well on board. I want to thank the members of the committee. We had to sit, especially the ANC study group, for very long hours discussing this, differing on some of the issues, because that is the ANC, differing on some of the issues, but at the end, we came at one conclusion and a collective decision. I want to thank you very much. The other political parties, the DA, IFP, Ms. Sybil Sitton was sick, but she has always called me to ask me what is happening in the committee and all that. The other parties as well. I want to thank them in they are not here today, but they have also apologized. Commissioner, you are having a very good team, legal team, in that office, I can tell you. They are not easy people to deal with. Very, very straightforward and rigid people. And that is what we need in this country. People who can think for themselves. Very, very much important. And I want to thank them for the selling work that they have done for the 3 weeks. We were busy for 3 weeks. I said to Mr. Krieg, his wife and his family called me to complain, to say that where's our father, where's my husband. His wife called me to say she has filed something else, I don't know what, but it's fine. I said, no, I will come to Pretoria, don't worry. But thank you very much for the work that the four of you have done, really. We appreciate it very much. You have said that your weekend was not nice. The first weekend, advocate said to me on the plane, you know, I'm going to sleep for the whole weekend. Don't want to talk to anybody. But you see, we have come to this thing, to the end. The organizations that have participated in this, I must mention that civil society prison reform initiative on this thing of the public hearings, UWC Law Faculty of Law, Center for Study of Violence and Reconciliation, SAPO, AIDS Law Project and TAC, Human Rights Commission, Legal Resource Center, the Department of Social Welfare and many other organizations who have submitted a written submission. We really want to thank them. The State Law Advisor, thank you very much, ma'am. It's not an easy thing, but we must do this work. You see, all of us are, you see, tomorrow is payday. And I can tell you, all of us will go to the paymaster and say, yeah, no, we have sweat for our salary. That's very much important. You see, other people are sitting somewhere else and getting money. But I if they don't want to pay you, man, call me. Call me. I will tell them that you are working very hard. Nadia, the researcher, thank you very much. I know that sometimes me and you have fought very hard. They don't know. Fought very hard in my office to say, no one do this. And I said, no, we are doing this. And you and I were saying, Nadia doing this. And then you say, no, not that. Mr. Vanara, thank you very much. You know, it's for the first time in Parliament that we are having as committees this type of legal guidance. For the 13 years that I'm here, it's for the first time we were dealing 13 years with bills. And it's the first time I'm telling you that we are having this legal guidance, not legal advice, but legal guidance when we are doing things. Thank you very much for your support, for your help, and for everything that you have done. It's very much important. You have also brightened my idea of what is going on in the. Thank you very much. I know that you are a very sharp lawyer. For the three weeks, I've learned that. But thank you very much. Claudine, thank you very much for everything. And I don't know your assistant. What is the name of your assistant? Who is giving me tea and coffee and whatever? I'm only taking this tea and coffee. Amanda, thank you very much for the help, the 3 weeks that you were here, man. It was not an easy thing, and everybody the media and everybody. But you know, the most important thing that I think that we have achieved as this portfolio committee and in this process, we have said on the 29th of May that we had a meeting in this very same room on the 29th of May to say that we are going to look at the bill, at the act, not the bill, the act. What are we going to do to strengthen the sentencing of people, keeping them in? And I think that we have exactly achieved that. I will explain why. You see, we spoke about this libus and whatever and whatever. Now, it's going to be very difficult, more difficult than before. Because it's now a whole committee who's going to decide. It's not only one person who's going to decide on that. It is now the National Council on Corrections who is going, including some of the members. And I've identified my order because he's looking like a judge. He's looking like with white hair. I've looked at him. Including the committee. It's a very, very, very great achievement that I think that we have made here. You know, yesterday only, 3 rapists were sentenced in KwaZulu-Natal by Judge Theron. Judge Theron said that this rapist must sit for 25 years before they can be released, considered on parole. And I want to support her wholeheartedly. But with this new thing that we have structured now, that 3 judges, magistrate, very credible structure that will decide on including those 3 rascals who were raping people left, right, and center. The judge said they must sit for 25 years before they can be considered on parole. Baba Fika is always talking about these people who is killing our police, who is doing whatever. They think that there's no law and order in South Africa. We are very much serious as this portfolio committee to keep these people in and not to let them do whatever they want. That was the beauty of this whole exercise for the 3 weeks that we have exercised. We have, according to me, we have tightened this thing of parole, that the National Council on Corrections must make recommendations to the minister before any person can be released. It's very much important, that thing. But let me thank each and everybody. I know it's Friday. People want to go home. And I'm going to release you because next week we must go to Bizana? Pitanyana. We are going there and you must go and prepare yourself and whatever. But thank you very much. Commissioner, it was not an easy thing. I see that all your hair is now gone. At least you had a little bit of hair, but it's gone now. Totally, completely. But thank you very much, each and every person, for your participation and help and what. Filga, thank you very much. And everybody, enjoy the weekend. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Oh, yeah. Can you please? You've noted the change that you said was the
wrong.
Yeah, I forget that. Yeah.
You know, if you were in private practice, you wouldn't do my lawyer. No, I'm telling you.